This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, and we have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon, getting you all set for the Winnipeg Jets and the Los Angeles Kings. 9 p.m. puck drop tonight on this fine station. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and be sure, throughout the course of the show, we're going to be reading off some of your Teemu Selänne reminiscences ahead of tomorrow night's game in Anaheim, the Teemu Tribute Night. So be sure to tweet at us today using hashtag Teemu1290. We'll read some of your comments on air as you remember Teemu Selänne in his time here in Winnipeg. Joining us in about 30 minutes time, Jim Fox, Los Angeles Kings color analyst, will join us to talk about the Jets and the Kings. I say good afternoon to my colleagues Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, good to see you both. A little bit of a later start today. I hope you got a lot of energy, energy in the tank, given you were able to sleep in for a couple extra hours this afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, boys. I got to tell you, having these extra 3 hours is incredible. I can do a little shopping, a little workout, a little yoga.
How many of those three things did you do?
None of them.
Yeah, of course.
I just slept in. But it's exciting. I got to tell you, people are really pumped up, as you guys know, for tonight's game, and especially with the players coming back that we'll get into in a second, but also Teemu night tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of Winnipeggers down there, and it just seems like any time there's anything involving Teemu, fans in the city get excited. It's unbelievable. We could do this 2 years from now, and fans will get excited. So it's going to be an awesome weekend.
I assume at some point in time the salute of Teemu Selänne that you're going to see tomorrow night in Anaheim will happen here in Winnipeg as well. Hopefully the Ducks are the opponents. You can sort of reciprocate that. But of course, we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. We'll talk about Teemu more. And we're going to be joined by Brian Hayward, Winnipeg Jets 1.0 member, of course, and he's currently the Anaheim Ducks color analyst. We'll talk to him about Teemu Selänne as well. Also, we'll play some audio from our interviews that we've conducted in the past with John Paddock, former Winnipeg Jets head coach, Winnipeg Jets general manager. He was the one who had to make the decision about trading Teemu Selänne. Well, forced to do so, of course, because of ownership at that time. Also, Phil Housley, some memories from him regarding Teemu Selänne as well. But we're going to start with what happened Thursday night in Phoenix when the Jets and the Arizona Coyotes played, and the Coyotes were able to really easily handle the Winnipeg Jets 4-1. Paul Maurice, we'll hear from him in a second. Paul Maurice said it was the worst loss of the season. In your minds, guys, was it also the Jets' worst loss of the season?
Yeah, I think so, Drew. I mean, you're talking about a team in Arizona we previewed had gotten demolished by St. Louis previously, the game before, 6-0. David Backes pops 4 goals. Can't score. They can't defend. They can't really do anything except for perform on the power play. And what did the Jets do after talking about penalties being an issue? Take an early penalty, allow a couple of power play goals, and boom. So, that was a terrible loss. And the execution was very poor. And you have to come back and play against two very good teams on the weekend here, LA tonight, Anaheim tomorrow, and get at least one win, because you can't continue to lose clean games here.
Ezzy, let's hear from Paul Maurice before we hear your comments about the game Thursday night in Glendale, Arizona.
No, we're just in the penalty box. Can't be in the box as much as we've been. And not have a night like that, our penalty killing has been great. That's one of their strengths, is their power play, and we just spent too much time in there. This was the worst game we played tonight. And we'll just leave it here.
I believe he means to say this is the worst game they've played all season, because the quote doesn't make any sense otherwise. Ezzy, your thoughts on that Thursday night game? I mean, how surprised are you to see the Jets come out so flat on Thursday night against the Coyotes, especially given sort of a couple different things? One, the disappointing way they lost Monday night against San Jose. Two, the fact that it was practically a home game for the Jets, given the number of Winnipeggers that have made this trip down to Phoenix and then L.A. and Anaheim Saturday and Sunday. And three, given the struggles that the Coyotes have had this season.
Yeah, and four, the fact that Martin Hanzel, they're arguably their best player, and Zdeněk Mihalik, arguably their second best defenseman after Oliver Ekman-Larsson, was also out. So they weren't healthy either. And I think that was the most disappointing game of the year for the Winnipeg Jets. I think they know that. I think you could hear that the way Paul Maurice was speaking after the game. He was frustrated. Guys, this team has to stop taking so many penalties. We've said this now for 3 months. They're the second most penalized team in the league after the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Pittsburgh Penguins don't have them beat by much. And this has been the case. I mean, if you remember, when the Jets played the Penguins in Winnipeg, there was over 100 penalty minutes in that game, and we were talking about, you know, depending on the type of game, it's okay if it's a rough game, Richie, but in a game like this, and we've seen this, we saw this against the Islanders, and we saw it against the Flyers. I mean, these penalties are costing Jets points in the standings. It's got to stop.
A couple of things. Penguins have way more talent than the Jets, so they can afford to take more penalties, but if they're going to try and win it down the road here, which they are, you know, the Cup, they have to calm down. The Penguins do. In terms of the Jets, though, I feel like the... You didn't hear a lot of players, even the coach, and maybe saying it to the public is different, of course, than saying it in the room, but acknowledge the penalty problem. You know, Paul Maurice always says he wants the team to stay aggressive. At some point, your penalty kill can't always save you, and you have to stop taking penalties. And it was odd. You know, you interview some of the players, you talk to some of the players, and they say, yeah, there's a problem, or some of them would acknowledge it more than others. But there is a problem here. You don't have enough talent, especially up front, to continue to take penalties. Because when you do, you get behind, and then the scoring... That, you know, your top line's been great, but the other otherwise, and Perreault's been really good. Otherwise, it's been a little bit checkered in terms of, you know, production.
5-on-5, their numbers have been horrendous the last four or five games.
And you can't do that. So it's a matter of discipline, and there's so many of these stick penalties. You know, Paul Maurice talks about being aggressive. Well, that's fine if you're the penalties are a roughing or, you know, maybe a boarding or whatever it may be. But we're talking about high sticking, which I can accept a little bit more. But the slashing and hooking, holding, that stuff, come on. It's got to end, especially because this team can skate. If you can skate, you shouldn't be taking those types of penalties.
Sure, those are penalties you take when you know you're trailing in the play or you're trying to slow an opponent down. But when you have a skating advantage, it's just about moving your legs and catching up. Because you're right, if there's one thing the Jets can do, it is skate. They have a number of fabulous skaters who can pick up speed and catch up to players when they need to on a back check.
Right, Drew, and you know Richie makes a good point. All teams take penalties. Every single team in the National Hockey League and any league takes penalties here. But you know when you look at some of the last few games, and I remember we were talking about this before last weekend's game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And going into this game against the Arizona Coyotes, the Coyotes actually have a pretty decent power play, seventh or eighth in the league. And last year they had a good power play. They've always had a good power play with those defensemen.
Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Keith Yandel. You're going to have a good power play.
Yep, those guys year after year are good. They knew that, and they went in there. And you know, Rich mentions some of the the penalties that were taken in the second period of that game. You know, the roughing on Anthony Peluso, the high sticking, the tripping, those types of things. You know, you don't want to sit here and blame certain guys. It's a team problem right now. It's not just one guy. You know, on one night it could be Blake Wheeler. Mm-hmm. One night it could be Jim Slater. One night it could be, you know, Paul Postma, whoever. It's something that, you know, and it's past the point, I think, Richie, of talking about it and saying, we got to improve this. Well, go out on the ice and improve it.
I agree.
The Jets have certainly surprised me this year, you know, the way they've played, you know, being so high in the Western Conference League standings right now. Pardon me, Western Conference standings. But, you know, you look at a game like that, and not only did the Jets need a big goal there, they needed some momentum 5-on-5, and when you keep taking these penalties, and the Coyotes, I believe they were 3-for-5 on the power play, it just kills momentum and just makes coming back in games even harder. The Jets have done a good job scoring first and coming back in games, and I think this really speaks to adversity. They're going through some major adversity right now. They're getting three key players back, but you've lost 4 or 5 games. You can't seem to stay out of the penalty box. You really got to figure a way to get over this. And
you've lost 4 or 5 games, and you've lost 4 or 5 games completely clean. Those aren't even overtime losses. You've only earned points in one of your last 5 games. And when you're struggling, throughout the season, and you're always going to have fits of time when you struggle, the key is to get those 1 point, to get the game into an overtime.
Which the Jets have done essentially all season, except for recently.
Sure. I mean, they've done pretty well. You know, they're towards the top in the Western Conference in getting the quote-unquote loser point.
Yeah.
You know, the Edmonton has the most of those. Edmonton and LA both have 9, then Colorado with 8, then the Jets are tied with Dallas with 7 quote-unquote loser points this season. And those are key for the team to make the playoffs, is, getting to your 41 wins. You got to finish 41-31-10 or 41-30, 29-12, something like that, to really make your name at least minimum into the playoff race. let's go back to the other thing I want to talk about from the Thursday game before we go ahead and look at to the LA game in the next segment. The power play. I mean, the power play was atrocious, I thought, on Thursday night. They couldn't even – they had, I believe I counted on either three or four icing calls against them while on the power play. Was it just a bad night for the power play, or was there something more troubling there for you than just sort of a bad night all around?
I wouldn't be concerned overall. I think the puck movement, especially on the top unit, has been terrific. They've performed very well. I think it's one bad game. Everything happened, and it all happened at once. You throw it out the window. You're going to roll out the same unit there. Matthew Perreault with those guys has been a really nice combination. And sure, your depth in the second unit sometimes has been an issue, but you're going to get a couple guys back. And
we'll talk about that next segment.
You can talk about Tobias Enstrom maybe not helping that first unit, but I'm sure he'll be thrown on the second unit tonight. And that'll be a help, and especially a help. You know, people don't talk about this a ton, and I know there's issues with the fact he doesn't shoot a lot, Ezzy, and he chokes up on that stick, and I have an issue with that because it gives away the opportunity for a one-timer. But his ability to skate that puck right through the neutral zone, even on the power play and the entries and getting the puck in there and allowing guys to have some opportunity in the offensive zone, he does a nice job of that. So he makes quick decisions, and he's a good skater. And the guys they have now in the second unit at times, like Postma, they've been holding the stick a little bit too tight, I think. So,
Ezzy, your thoughts on the power play from Thursday's game? And really, do you think that Thursday's game just goes out the window, or do you think there's still a hangover after Thursday's game, given how poorly they played?
It's a good question, because that was the one game out of these three road games on this trip that you were thinking that the Jets really had the best chance at winning. No offense to the Arizona Coyotes, they're just not a very good team. And, you know, Richie mentioned they got smoked by the St. Louis Blues in the previous game. So as far as the power play goes, Drew, I mean, it wasn't good on Thursday night. There's no way to sugarcoat that. I agree with Richie, though. I'm not concerned, because if you look at, you know, especially the Jets have played 41 games now, and if you break it up into either 10-game mm-hmm. segments or 20-game segments, the Jets' power play has been a lot better in the last 20 games, probably since around early December. I remember when we were talking about it, when Richie wrote an article for IllegalCurve.com about the power play, the Jets were in 28th, I believe, in the league, and now they're around 20th or 21st.
The 20th, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, in the last month or so, they've really improved. So I think you don't want to, you know, look at that one game and say that there's a big problem. But as far as the hangover goes, I mean, whether there's a hangover or not, the Jets must get 2 points out of these next two games. If you go home and mm-hmm. you don't get at least 2 points, we were talking about this, we're liking to come home with 3 or 4 points, and that's already the most they can get is 4 now. So you got to beat LA or Anaheim clean. That's the only way you got to do it. And to me, the more winnable game is LA, but neither of them are going to be easy.
No, they certainly won't be. We'll talk about the LA Kings coming up after the break. We remind you, we want to hear your Teemu Selanne reminiscences all show long. Use Teemu, or pardon me, hashtag Teemu1290. You can send it to us at Illegal Curve. Bigger for Animals, using hashtag Teemu1290, says he went to see him in Anaheim the year before Jets 2.0 came, waited for him in the parking lot. He drove onto the sidewalk to say hello to him. So isn't that just tell you? I mean, we hear so many stories like that. We want to hear yours. Hashtag Teemu1290.
Dave, Drew. Yeah, I just wanted to throw something in here. Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com just telling me, because the three players coming back, Stewart, Enstrom, and Kane, the Jets have reassigned Keaton Ellerbe and Patrice Cormier to St. John's.
Absolutely. We'll talk about the players getting healthy and the new lineup for the Jets coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's in on him, Hallischuk, freed up now by Kane, back toward the line here for Harrison, up top for Eklipson, let a shot go, deflected, but they score! Evander Kane on the doorstep, Rask got a piece of it, but not all of it.
From a game in Boston earlier this year, I believe, Evander Kane scoring for the Winnipeg Jets, and that's what Jets fans want to hear. As good news is coming down from the injury wire, Evander Kane, Toby Enstrom, and Mark Stewart have all been activated from the injured reserve. They will be in the lineup tonight for the Winnipeg Jets against the Los Angeles Kings. Patrice Cormier and Keaton Ellerbe sent back down to St. John's, and apparently Paul Postma and Adam Party are going to be the healthy scratches on the Winnipeg Jets blue line tonight against the Kings. I mean, huge news for the Jets that, you know, they've managed to finally get through this injury bug. For the most part, who knows if it actually is finally over, but they are now completely healthy, with the exception, of course, of Jacob Trouba, obviously a key injury for the Winnipeg Jets and their blue line. But, you know, what had seemed like it was going to be the never-ending game of injured Jets defensemen and Evander Kane is finally beyond them, and they can get back to fielding the roster, for the most part, that they expected to field at the beginning of the season.
Absolutely, Drew. And, you know, Postma and Party have been whipping boys really for the most of the fans, and they've struggled. There's no question about that, and I can understand why the fans are frustrated. You're going to get a nice injection there of toughness. Mark Stewart apparently set the tone in practice yesterday, which is important after a tough loss. Enstrom, as we mentioned earlier, will help with the transition game, help on the power play. You can criticize his power play performance until he got injured, but his skill set will certainly be a nice addition to the team. And obviously, Evander Kane helps the depth up front. It's that third line we talked about, 12 goals. The guys that they addressed for the past few games, third and fourth line, combined for 12 goals. Combined. Six guys, 12 goals all year. That's two goals a player. You throw Evander Kane in there, who's struggled, and again, it's difficult to play with, but can create opportunities and certainly drive that line to a better performance. So, especially with a guy like Adam Lowry, good size there down low. And against a big team in LA, and Anaheim, so it's a nice timing there as well. These additions are huge. Now the Jets have to make sure that they maintain the, I guess, desperation, and you know, it's that back, I guess, that Bill Simmons Ewing theory. You have a bunch of injuries, you guys are going to step up and perform. You have to make sure that level of competitiveness, not compete, because that's not really the right word to use, competitiveness is at the level that it was when there was a bunch of injuries. And that's always a test, Ezzy, because when guys who have to play above their heads and they feel like they're caring more than usual, when everybody kind of takes a step back because everybody's in, you know, everybody's back, does the team play as hard? And it's not calling one person out specifically. It's just it's a natural thing. Is, okay, well, this guy's back. Kane's back. I don't have to play as hard. Or, you know, Enstrom's back and Sherratt doesn't feel like he has to carry as much. So that'll be interesting to see how the Jets perform. And, of course, now we're talking about, and Rick has talked about this at length on his show and on the pre- and post-game, the tough schedule. Western Conference, LA tonight, Anaheim tomorrow. A lot more Western Conference games down the stretch here. So it's not going to be easy.
No, it definitely is not going to be easy. And if you're the Winnipeg Jets, you're hoping that, you know, the return of Stewart and Enstrom on the back end and Evander Kane on that third line, it looks like he'll play with Adam Lowry and Matt Halaschuk, who he's played with a lot, especially since he went down with an injury. I should say before he went down with an injury, Richie. But you have to hope that you get a good start. We know that this Jets team has played a lot differently when they scored the first goal. They've been very successful when they've scored the first goal. And, you know, you have to hope that, you know, you clamp down defensively. You know, they've struggled, and, you know, the goaltending hasn't been as good, but it's a team defensive game. We've seen those mistakes in previous games going back to the Philadelphia Flyers game before Christmas, and, you know, the Jets have to find a way to get out of a funk. This is the type of game, and the Los Angeles Kings might be tied with the Winnipeg Jets right now, and they might be in seventh place in the Western Conference, but this is a team, to me, that still hasn't really woken up. And so you don't want to get in a situation where you're playing a run and gun type of game and exchanging goals, you know, every 5 minutes. I think that could be dangerous. You have to hope that you keep this game relatively low scoring and close. The Kings, it's been well documented, guys. The Kings have the ability to come back, and we saw that the other night against the Nashville Predators.
Sure, they were down. That was last Saturday, I believe, Saturday afternoon, and they were down, what, 5-0 or 6-2 or something?
They were down at least 4 goals when I was following it, and, you know, so this team, they can score goals, and, you know, they're still a very good defensive team, and, you know, I think people are looking at the Kings and saying, well, you know, what's wrong with the Kings? Well, I mean, Robin Regier and Slava Voynov haven't been there a lot as of late. Regier is injured. He hasn't played in about 3 weeks. And Voyanov, we're not really sure. We'll ask Jim Fox about Voyanov. We're not really sure what his future is, if there even is a future with him with the LA Kings. So you're talking about, Richie, two of your top four defensemen there. Absolutely. So, I mean, and the LA Kings have still done a pretty good job, you know, making up for that. Guys like Matt Green, and then they added McBain. I think he might be a scratch tonight, but they've done a pretty good job, you know, with the group they have. But this is still a team, you know, you look at the third line, you got Justin Williams, Jarrett Stoll. Dwight King, I think, is an underrated player. You know, he's a guy that's more of a kind of a grinder, physical type of guy. But this is a group, Richie, that can score on all three lines, even all four lines, when you consider Mike Richards is on the fourth line. And, you know, so mm-hmm. it's nice that the Jets have a guy like Mark Stewart, very good defensively, and Tobias Enstrom back. He'll help with the possession game, as everybody likes to focus on. So it's going to be a tough... These two games are going to be very tough. Like I said, if you can come out with a clean 2 points in either one of these games, I think that's going to save the trip. If the Jets end up only coming back with 1 point, or, God forbid, no points, that's going to be disastrous, Drew.
Well, it's just... I mean, it would tell you that they've lost, you know, if that happens, then they've lost six of their last seven clean, which is just it's a very difficult streak to overcome. Now, they've banked some points given their good play in the first 41 games of the season, but this is game 42 tonight. So your second half of the year, you know, the playoffs are in the, you know, are in front of you. The start of the season is now in the rearview mirror. So everything has to be geared up for the playoff stretch drive. You look at the Jets defense for tonight, Sherrod and Bufflin. You're going back with the Enstrom-Bogosian pairing that had played well together throughout the beginning of the season. And you have Stewart and Harrison as your bottom pair, which, you know what Stewart and Harrison are going to bring you. It's going to mm-hmm. be, you know, physicality, and it's going to be grit, and it's going to be toughness. And
well, especially against tonight's team, because you're playing against a team that maybe not be the fastest team, but they're big and strong.
Right.
Stewart and Harrison are both big guys, tough guys. Third line in L.A., deep, can cycle the puck, create opportunities, and that's the pairing that you want to have against that team.
Well, I mean, ideally you'd like to have a better pairing, but given you'd rather have that over Party and Postma or whatever else.
That's fine. I have no issue with that pairing. Tonight and tomorrow, I think that's going to be a good... Because remember, if you want to talk about tomorrow, you're talking about Getzlaff, Perry. They work everything off the cycle. Getzlaff and his line works off the cycle at times as well, and not to the successful level as Getzlaff and Perry do. But, I mean, these are the kind of teams that are going to use their body to create space. So I think that pairing should be just fine for the next two games. Again, they're not all-stars, Drew, but they know what their job is. Get the puck out, man up, and of course, you need the support from the forwards, which the Jets have generally gotten. And the forwards have done a nice job this year of supporting the defense and making the passes shorter and kind of outmanning the puck at times.
Richie, I agree with what you said earlier, though. I mean, this team has to play as desperate as the situation is, because coming out of California and beating the Kings and the Ducks and getting 4 points, that's a tall task. So you have to come out there and you have to win a game, and you have to do whatever it takes. We've seen the Jets team rebound and win games that, you know, maybe they shouldn't have won. You know, you look at the Chicago game, going into Chicago, winning 5-1, and then even earlier in the season and grinding out a 1-0 victory. That's the type of game that you have to do, and I think the Jets can do this. I mean, they've lost to the Kings. That was earlier in the season. The Jets hadn't found their rhythm yet. So I think this game will be lower scoring. I think the Jets, you know, can pull this one out, but you don't want to... This Kings team, like we said, and you can look at the Kings throughout the year, they'll come back on you. If you go up 3-1, the game's not over, even if you're in the third period. So it's the type of game that you got to play very well defensively against this team.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not the same sort of shutdown defense that you've seen from the LA Kings. Now, they're still pretty good at it. They've given up the 12th fewest goals in the league, but the Jets have given up the 6th fewest goals, and the Kings score more than you saw. There's only a couple years ago where, you know, entering the playoffs, you know, the all the talk was, can this team score?
Yeah, and it's not a team that's going to score with one particular line. You look at their performance, nobody's putting up a point a game or anything, but they have lines that can all score. You might see Dustin Brown on the top line tonight, and we're going to ask Jim Fox kind of why he's really struggled over the past year and a half now. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Mike Richards, but really the keys to this team, is, as he's talked about this line a lot, is Carter, Toffoli, and Pearson. That's really, you hear all the big names now, but there's these younger guys that are really taking their game to the next level. Obviously, Kopitar is that guy. And some of the younger players are entrusted with more minutes on the back end, like Muzzin and Martinez. Both guys who are given new contracts.
Michael Hutchinson going to be in net for the Jets tonight against the LA Kings. He made his first start in the NHL at the Staples Center about 3 months ago, maybe.
First start of the season.
Pardon me. That's right. Yeah. First start of the season. He had some starts last year. You're right. You know, good to go with Hutchinson. You think of any sort of ramifications from that first bad start in LA earlier this year?
He's been great. You got to go with him. You want to, again, as you know, you obviously want to get one of these games here, and you go with Hutchinson. You played Pavic last game, and you know, you could take an issue with a goal or two there. The team didn't give him much help either, and they haven't actually given him much help. The team's been scoring a lot more for Hutchinson than it has for Pavlik, but Hutchinson's certainly been the better goalie. One thing to watch for tonight, of course, is an LA team that's strong and big. They go to the net, and they create havoc. So how does Hutchinson handle the traffic in front? And how did the Jets handle that in terms of their defensemen and taking the front of the net? That's why I think Harris and Stewart today are not a bad combo, because of the size and ability to create havoc in front that the Kings present.
Sure, not that Bogosian of Buffalo and Sherrod also have good size.
Saying just the deep, that you're talking with three lines that can do that,
sure.
Right?
Yeah. So look at the Jets forwards. Evander Kane comes back. Do you think the presence...
Just to interrupt you, I think you'll see Anstrom Bogosian likely get the Carter line, because the Carter line can skate a little better than the other lines.
Okay.
And I think that's a good skating pairing for the Jets.
Anstrom and Bogosian, yes. Up against Carter, Pearson, and Toffoli.
Likely, yeah.
Called that 70s line, because all players wear number
that's a dangerous line.
Yeah.
It really is a dangerous line, and they've trailed off a little bit since the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And, there's a possibility... a lot of people are picking Jeff Carter to be the representative for the All-Star game. He's leading the team in scoring right now. But, as Richie mentioned, they have three lines, even four lines, that can score. Kyle Clifford and Trevor Lewis, I think, are really good players on their fourth line. I mean, there's a reason why they won the Stanley Cup this year. It wasn't a fluke, right? So,
yeah.
I on the topic of Hutchinson, Drew, just quickly, I think it's nice for him to get the start, because he wasn't happy with his first start of the season. And, we know that Paul Maurice is rotating the goalies right now. So I don't think it's a surprise that, they're going to Hutchinson after Pavlik played in Arizona. And
if he wins tonight, you play him tomorrow, too. It's no travel. It's a 40-minute drive.
Sure.
You play him tomorrow.
You were just there in Cali.
I was.
One more, another Timu 1290 reminiscence. This coming from @JennyMagoo. She was a cart girl in the 90s. Timu asked her to hit his drive for him on the second hole at a tournament. Keep him coming all show long. Hashtag Timu 1290. Send them to us @IllegalCurve. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jim Fox, LA Kings color analyst, is going to join us.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In the zone, down low, left corner to Kopitar. Kopitar fighting off a check to Williams, out to Mitchell. Walks the blue line. Mitchell shoots, tip, save, rebound, score! Andre Kopitar! Willie Mitchell got the shot from up high.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Los Angeles Kings color analyst on Fox Sports West, Jim Fox. Jim, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, anytime. My pleasure. Thank you.
Jim, obviously got you on to talk about tonight's Jets-Kings game in Los Angeles, and we're going to get into that. But before we discuss the Los Angeles Kings road record, because that's really been a point of concern for the Kings as they're 5-8-6 away from the Staples Center, the Kings have had great success against the West this year, the much more difficult Western Conference, yet are only 6-7-3 against the Eastern Conference. Is that random, or is there a reason for that?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, we would have to check the total stats. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the East has the advantage over the West this year in head-to-head matchups. So I would say, if my numbers are correct, the last time I looked at them, it's a complete turnaround from last year. But certainly the East plays a more wide-open game. The Kings have been known as a team that could shut that down. But the area the Kings have struggled in this year has been defense, and I know their goals against is usually still top 10, those types of things. Early on, it was top 5 and even top 3. But that's where they've slid a little bit. So I guess if you look at that, you would say wide-open game, used to be able to shut it down. Now they're not shutting it down as much as they used to, and it's showing in the standings.
Jim, I guess you answered the question a little bit, but obviously tonight's game between the Kings and the Jets is at Staples Center. But as far as the Kings' struggles on the road, why have they struggled so much on the road? And then conversely, why have they been so hot at home?
Well, I think the first thing you look at when you see that discrepancy at all times is matchups. Daryl Sutter has stated many times this year as the coach, he doesn't have the same personnel specifically back on the blue line. Mm-hmm. Mitchell has gone to free agency. Voinoff is suspended. At any one time this year, either Martinez, Regeer, or someone's been hurt. So the defense is a little bit thin. So not able to get the matchups on the road that you can get at home. So at home, you feel a little bit more stable. Again, that is the Kings' foundation. That, you know, center defense out to the forwards. It's built from the back out. So missing that, that's been an issue. Now, what has been happening on the road has been starts, very slow starts. The Kings getting behind the eight ball, unable to get anything going early in games. As the game goes along, the Kings get better. But this year, they've gone too far behind the eight ball on the road, and they can't catch up.
You know, Jimmy, talk about the defense, and you mentioned Willie Mitchell. At least something like that, you know, Dean Lombardi can attempt to plan for it, because, you know, Mitchell leaves via free agency, and you can try and build the roster accordingly. And the other injuries, you know, while they're not expected, that they happen. The Voinov off-the-ice issues, we won't get into the issues, but not having him there and then not being able to obviously plan for that, how much does that hurt the Kings, and how much is that just ability to move the puck out of his own zone so easily hurt the Kings' transition game?
Yeah, and I'll preface it, and you were kind of saying that too, I'll preface it with, we understand the seriousness of the nature of the issue that's going on, and when we discuss Voinov, we're talking only hockey circles, and that's where we're going to stay, but having missed your top two defensemen, having missed a right-handed defenseman, which is very difficult to get, he's a puck carrier, he's a power play guy, he does so many different things, and that's something I think the Kings have missed more than they thought they would. Again, it's, you can't predict it. You can't figure it out. You can't plan ahead, as you were saying, for it. And, of course, early on, there was the salary cap issue, where now it's off the books. But, guys, having said that, we're still in uncharted territory here. Voinov has a trial coming up in March. What happens if he's deemed to be... Does his number go back on the cap?
Right.
What happens if he's guilty? Does it stay off the cap? The trade deadline is already passed by then. What happens if you make a trade before the deadline?
That's a good point.
Voinov comes back. You don't have room. There's so many unknowns here that it makes it very difficult to plan.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is LA Kings color analyst Jim Fox. Jim, sort of staying with the defense, Drew Doughty is playing well over 3 minutes more per game this season than he was last season. Is there a fear in the organization that he may wear down?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think that's Drew's, the way he approaches the game has always been with a lot of energy. And I think that's something that the Kings will expect to happen. I don't think they feel the wear down is there. I think that, you know, details do slip when you play that much, no question, no matter who you are. But he's used to it, especially in a playoff situation. I understand the question because what you're saying, you know, as the season goes on and the Western Conference and a little bit more travel, and, you know, do you have just that sharpness that you would like that if you're not playing as much? We had a graphic the other night, guys, on our telecast that showed the guys, three players on the Kings, ice time has increased more than anyone over last year.
Wow.
Doughty, Muzzin, and Martinez were in the top 12 of the league. All three guys in the top 12 as far as ice time increasing compared to last year. So what we were just talking about with the defense has had a huge impact on the team.
Jim, I saw John Rosen, the LA Kings insider. He was reporting that Robin Regier was skating with the team. I believe it was an optional skate today.
Morning skate. He was skating with the team, has been skating with the team, he's been practicing, but the hand injury, it's still not to a position yet where he's getting full force and shots and those types of things. Of course, Robin's not known for a shot, so that's not really going to, you know, hurt his game all that much, but still the ability, obviously, to handle your stick. So Robin's skating, he's participating in drills, he's right there. It's a matter of getting that dexterity back into his hand, and once that happens, he'll be right back in.
Jim, we've asked you about Mike Richards a few times in the last few appearances on the show. We're not going to ask you about him this time, but along a similar line, you know, you look at Dustin Brown and a guy who was putting up 50 to 55 points for, you know, years and years. Last year he struggled. This year his struggles have continued, and points-wise, and even in the Olympics last year, and he plays a tough style. I mean, similar to Mike Richards, those guys don't back down and didn't back down from anybody in the past. Is that one of the reasons why maybe his offensive performance has been lagging a little bit lately?
I would say this, guys. I have rarely seen Dustin Brown skate as well as he has, handle the puck as well as he has, and that's the honest truth. He has been
really
very impactful all season long. The finish has not been there. Hey, that's the bottom line, right?
Yeah.
And I understand where you're looking at the numbers. I watch every game.
Right, of course. Yeah.
He started the season last year with a hamstring injury, and he wasn't skating well, and it took him, wow, till after the All-Star break to get it going back on track. This year, that has not been an issue. Now, at times, Dustin can get the blinders on. You know, he can play too much one-on-one, those types of things. And they want him to shoot the puck more. And I think he's trying to do that. But as far as looking at what he's doing with the puck and how much he has it and all those things, man, I really wouldn't change much except put it in the net every once in a while.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Jim Fox. He's the LA Kings color analyst. Jim, you look at the Kings over the last couple of years, and I mean, this is a team that has played an absolute ton of hockey. Obviously, they had the Stanley Cup run last year. They had the Western Conference run the year before, the Cup run the year before that. You've had the Olympics in there, and this is a team that's had a ton of Olympic representation, given, you know, how talented they obviously are. You know, is there concern that just, you know, they've obviously struggled this season, that just maybe there's not enough energy left in the tank? You know, we talked about Drew Doughty before, but the team as a whole, do you feel as though they have the same jump that they've had in previous years?
I think I'm going to go back to, which would be a cliche, but it's more emotional than physical. Hmm. I really do believe that. Now, I'm not a player, I'm not playing, but I'll tell you this, guys, in our pregame shows over the last month or so, we've been playing Stanley Cup moments. Kings Vision, which is a part of the Kings, LAKings.com, put together these excellent features. They're very well done. But I'm watching them on our pregame show, and I'm kind of watching before the games. I'm going, wow, I remember that moment. Oh, what a great point. And then I look out to the ice and go, oh, we got to play a regular season game tonight.
Right.
Now, that's no disrespect to the opposition. And again, I'm not a player, but I'm sure there's an emotional letdown issue. They've been struggling with it. They've talked about it. They've addressed it. They've been honest about it, but they can't seem to find a way to get consistency into their game. In all honesty, guys, against the best teams in the league this year, the Kings have played great games. Mm-hmm. They really have. The top teams, they played real good games. But the pace of play against the teams that are a little bit lower in the standings, the Kings can't seem to find right now that emotion, and they're talking about it. They're just trying to get it, and they can't find it right now.
Jim, last year, Kings general manager Dean Lombardi went out and he acquired Marian Gaborik. And as you know, he was a huge part of the cup-winning team. You know, with about 2 months to go before the trade deadline, what's the one position you think Dean Lombardi might try to address, you know, heading into the playoffs?
Well, that all depends on something we don't know anything about, And that is the Voinov situation. I'm just speculating. I haven't talked to Dean about it. But it would still be a blue liner. It would be, you know, a top three guy, which is very difficult to get. So you know you're going to have to give up some huge assets if you're going to go after a player like that. If that were the case and Voinov were still to come back, then you might have to send someone to the minors and get their number off the cap or something like that. You'd be placed in a situation you don't want to do something. But if there is a position, no question it's back on the blue line. And if possible, it would be that top three guy who's a right-handed shooter. Now, that's very difficult to come by. I think, you know, Mike Richards, I'll talk about him, and I know you guys follow it. His numbers have to increase just because of cap issues.
Mm-hmm.
5.75. And this guy is a winner.
Yeah.
He works hard. He's there. He grinds it out, but he has not been producing enough for that number. So I don't think the Kings would trade for that offensive guy anymore. I think they have to live what they have up front. But if they had to get something, it would be back on the blue line.
Jim, you think maybe Rob Blake comes back?
There you go. He's coming back next Saturday. Yeah. Believe me that. That's when the Kings are retiring his number. So
that's awesome.
That'll be okay.
Yeah, they'll put off the retirement if they can get him out of retirement, to get him on the blue line. Jim Fox is the LA Kings color analyst. Jim, appreciate your time as always. Enjoy tonight's game.
Hey, guys, my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jim. Before we go to break, we'll keep you up to date on the AFC divisional playoffs that are going on. The Baltimore Ravens, you know, drove the ball right down the Patriots' throat to start the game.
Why is Drew more excited about that than the Jets' first two segments?
I'm not more excited about it. I'm excited about keeping everybody abreast about everything that's going on.
It's a hockey show, Drew.
Ravens 7, Patriots nothing. Winnipeg Joe with a reminiscence of Timu Solani as well.
Before that, more importantly, Colorado down 2-0 to Dallas earlier in the game today, afternoon game. Colorado 3 straight goals, 3-2 in the middle of the second, or the end of the second.
Lots going on in the sports world. We'll keep you up to date. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wheeler cross lane, Buffett scores! Wheeler to Buffett to the back of the net, the Jets are up 3-1.
Going to spend this segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show talking about Dustin Byfuglien, his contract status, and his future with the Winnipeg Jets. Before we do that, another Temu 1290 memory. Use that hashtag. Send it to us at Illegal Curve. At Winnipeg Joe remembers that when he was working at a local video store and Teppo Numminen and Timu Solani came in to sign up for video store memberships. This is going, obviously, back in the day. And they both spent a good hour afterwards signing autographs for everybody that was in the video store. And he uses hashtag classy. So certainly something that we've heard before about Timu Solani and Teppo Numminen, for that matter, as well. Also a very classy individual during his time in Winnipeg.
I know Richie wants to get to Dustin Byfuglien here, but just quickly, if you haven't had a chance to read Tim Campbell's interview with Timu in the today's Free Press,
great.
You should definitely read it. He talks about playing street hockey on Campbell Street in River Heights, and a lot of different memories from that rookie season and his time in Winnipeg. Well, it's awesome.
Of course, Tim was there and would have chronicled all that for the Winnipeg Free Press back 20 years or so now. So he would remember that and have firsthand witness to that. So then Tim Campbell would be a terrific source for memories regarding that, of course, of the Winnipeg Free Press. Dustin Byfuglien has been, I'd say for the last month, since the injury bug really struck the Jets defenseman, he's been their best player, I would say. I think, maybe even 6 weeks, he's been their best player. He's got 1 year left on his contract after this season. I think he's got a cap hit of $5.2 million on that contract. Coming into this year, without knowing how the Jets were going to do, people thought, hey, Dustin Byfuglien, he might be a trade candidate. If the team's off to a poor start, you could maybe consider trading him, before the trade deadline or during the season, get a real big return if the team was continuing to struggle. Well, the team's currently in a playoff spot with 41 games to go. Dustin Byfuglien has really, in his time going back to defense, has really reaffirmed himself as a top-notch player on this Jets team. What should the Jets do with Dustin Byfuglien as he enters, and he plays, the next 120 games? After the next 120 games, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. How should the Jets handle Dustin Byfuglien and his future with the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I think it starts with the question, what do you think what Dustin Byfuglien will want to do? And I think when you talk about that, you ask yourself, okay, if Dustin Byfuglien reaches UFA status, if he's able to sign with any team in the National Hockey League, would he sign with the Jets if he knew he wasn't playing defense? And I personally think the chances are nil. I don't think he will re-sign in Winnipeg if he's playing forward, unless they pay him a disproportionate amount of money based upon his contributions as a forward, which I don't see happening. So get back to, if he's not playing defense on the Jets, will he re-sign? And if he won't re-sign, you can't let him go into next season on the squad, because you can't lose assets for nothing, especially if you're not going to spend a ton of money. Understandably so, in most respects. So that gets back to the question then. And we'll talk about it in terms of what happens when Trouba comes back and if everybody is healthy at that time and all those three right side defensemen, Byfuglien, Trouba, Bogosian. But the Jets have a decision there to make, I think, because Byfuglien's made it very clear he wants to play defense. He's finally back on defense. And I said a couple weeks back, this is an audition for the whole league for him. This is a lot of money on the line. He proves he can be a top four defender in the National Hockey League. He'll make a heck of a lot more than being a second or third line right winger. And if he's done that, which I think he probably has, if teams think that a long-term deal or even a shorter-term deal with a lot of money, they'd get return on that, then he's going to make... And, you heard Jim Fox talking about it last segment, what they would do for a right-side defenseman. Never mind a right-side defenseman, top three guy who can move the puck. Detroit's been dying for one of those.
Sure.
Lots of teams. So, Byfuglien's going to have a market for his services that almost assuredly will be on defense. I think teams, even if he didn't want to play defense, teams would try to make him play defense, but he wants to. So what are the Jets going to do? Trouba's also up after next season. Going to have to pay him, and you better, because he's that good. And then you got Bogosian. Yes, a young defenseman, signed long-term. These are not easy decisions to be made, but there's going to be decisions that have to be made, and we can't really tell yet, because Kevin Cheveldayoff really hasn't made a ton of moves.
Right, Richie, and I think the point that resonates the most with me as far as Dustin Byfuglien goes is that this year he has proven that he can play consistently on defense. And that's something that we didn't see in the 2.5 years as a defenseman in the Winnipeg Jets. Not to say that he isn't a good player, but I think he showed that sometimes he couldn't handle the larger workload. so playing the 25, 27 minutes. Since the Jets were decimated by injuries, Bufflin has proven he can play 27 or 29 minutes against good teams. Like, think about it. Dustin Bufflin was playing defense against the Chicago Blackhawks.
But that's the key, right? You mentioned playing defense.
Right. And you mentioned
that's the key,
that he, Richie, that he wants to stay as a defenseman. And I think Paul Maurice has made it pretty clear that if he continues to play like this, he'll stay on defense. And that was the issue, you know, going
Where's
back
the ice
to
time?
Exactly. And that was going back to
who's playing,
you know, and that's you know, the issue. You know, we saw Ellerby was sent down, and Adam Partey and Paul Postma are now healthy scratches. So now who comes out when Jacob Trouba comes back? Is it Ben Sherratt? Is it Jay Harrison? You'd have to think it's one of those two players as opposed to Dustin Bufflin. You can't healthy scratch Dustin Bufflin.
Well, no, you put it forward because your third line right winger isn't good enough right now anyways.
You can't put him at forward. I mean, Dustin Bufflin as a defenseman, as we've clearly seen, we knew that, you know, previously when Claude Noel was the coach, there was good Buff and bad Buff.
Yeah.
You haven't seen very much at all of quote-unquote bad Buff since he's been back playing defense under Paul Maurice. This guy is he's a difference maker on the blue line.
So what do you do?
I mean, you have a tough decision. I mean, I think if you're the Jets, I mean, especially with, you know, ideally you maybe see if somebody, Bogosian or Trouba, can maybe play the left side. You saw Zach Bogosian sort of start to play the left side at the beginning of last year with Jacob Trouba. Mm-hmm. The results of that experiment were probably leaning towards the negative side as opposed to the positive side.
I don't mind that idea. Now, you have a forward depth issue, which is a problem, but I don't mind that idea of Drew moving him to the other side if he can play the other side, if they're able to play the other side, either of those defensemen. I wouldn't want to move Trouba.
No, I wouldn't want to move Trouba.
I mean, maybe Bogosian, you move to the left side, you take a chance, or even Bufflin, you ask to try and play the different side. Although the way he comes down the right side and protects the puck and that natural ability, I would rather try Bogosian, because Bufflin seems to utilize the right side in terms of creating offense more than Bogosian does, and he's a better offensive player. Okay, if that doesn't work though, then what do you do? And can you afford to play Bufflin and play defense anyways if you're going to have to pay Trouba and you're already paying Enstrom and Bogosian over $5 million?
Look, if somebody, I mean, in an ideal situation, I think you try and get one of Enstrom or Bogosian off your books. And I think the answer...
So you're saying to trade them?
Yes, I would say that. I don't think you can let... If Dustin Bufflin...
Well, you can't trade Enstrom and then keep the other three. You've got three right side guys.
I know, but I'm saying if... I think Bogosian's the guy you try and trade. But
so you're saying you want to pick... That's what I make sure, because it's tough. You're saying you want to keep Bufflin.
Yes.
Sign him to an extension.
Yes.
And trade Bogosian.
That would be my choice. Right now, the way he is playing defense... And I mean, obviously, you can't tell if that's how he's going to play, you know, and you never know about injuries, and you never, there's all the unknowns. Mm-hmm. But the way he's playing right now, you cannot lose him in unrestricted free agency for nothing. If you make the determination that there's somebody's calling you up, you know, next year or this summer, or, you know, if the season slips away, and making you a godfather offer for Dustin Bufflin and his services
for 1 year of him, no,
I don't think anybody's doing that.
Yeah.
But I don't think, if he expresses an interest, if his representatives call up Kevin Cheveldayoff and say, we don't want to go to unrestricted free agency. We want, Dustin wants to be here long term, as long as there's a commitment that he's a defenseman from the organization.
Okay.
I think you have to probably.
And how much are you going to pay him?
The way he's playing right now, I think you have to pay him $6.5 million.
How's that going to fit in the book? Do you have to pay Trouba?
I know. I agree.
And Scheifele.
I agree. But you cannot... He's that much of a difference maker.
And Hutchinson after the next year.
I get that.
If he continues to perform this level.
He's a difference maker. Dustin Bufflin's a difference maker on a team. The problem is that you signed Zach Bogosian to that... To a longer contract than you really needed to at that time.
You can still trade Bogosian. I think there'd be a market for Zach Bogosian. I wouldn't worry about that.
Well, and then how I think I would deal with the problem. I don't think you can lose Dustin Bufflin for nothing. And if he wants to be here... And you want him here as a defenseman, I think you have to make that. I think you have to listen to that phone call.
Do you think that Bufflin can be as an impactful defenseman when he's not playing 26 minutes a night? Because Trouba's better than him defensively. So he's going to match up against the number one line more often than not. So Bufflin's not going to play as much as he is now. Can he still be as good?
Rich, you wrote about this a few years back, maybe even when the Jets came back. The Jets already have a disproportionate amount of money in their cap.
That was spent 2011.
Spent on defensemen. So you so Drew, you say Bufflin, you know, you're going to pay him maybe $6.5 million a year. Well, you can't have four defensemen making more than $4 million a year.
More than five, probably, because Truba's going to get at least a long term deal. Get at least five.
You just can't
look. You have 60 minutes. You have to play for your right side defense, and assuming all three of them are still on your right side defense, the three being Bogosian, Truba, and Bufflin, you have too many good players and not enough minutes. Now, that's a good problem to have.
Yes.
If you happen to, or if you're able to trade one of them, in my mind, Bogosian, if you're able to trade Bogosian, and all of a sudden
you have to sign Bufflin before that, though.
You have to sign Bufflin before that. If you sign Bufflin, and then, I mean, it sort of, you know, tells Bogosian that you're probably on the trade market. And then all of a sudden, I believe
Bogosian has some form of a no trade. He would be a UFA. Bogosian's played 3-2. Sorry, I'm counting on a lot. This would be year 7, I believe. So Bogosian, after I think July 1, would kick in as a no trade. Yeah,
sure.
Their option of window for trading him would be before then, without restriction.
Right now, of course, we do. If Cap Geek was still around, we'd be able to confirm those. But we'll deal with it.
I think that would be the case.
I think your numbers are right. Look, I think it's a good problem to have too many assets than too few assets, obviously. But if you end up trading one and all of a sudden your right side minutes are divided 25 minutes for Jacob Trouba per night and 22 or 23 minutes for Dustin Bufflin per night, and your last pairing right side defenseman is playing 12 minutes a night, you got a good defense there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, these are difficult decisions. You're basing it largely on a period of 6 weeks right now.
I know.
Right, I mean,
but you can. I mean, I know
you also can't. You can't. I mean, it's not even going to be that long of a time where he's playing defense. Because then, what are you going to do with the minutes when Truba comes back? As we mentioned, then that decision has to be made in the offseason. I mean, these are not easy choices.
Well, let me ask you: what would you do? I'll flip it around. You have me on the record for how I would handle it. How would you handle it?
Well, to me, I think everybody talks about trading Enstrom. I think Enstrom is more valuable than people give him credit for, and I think playing on the left side in the National Hockey League in the transition game, I think he's valuable. So I would back off of the Enstrom trade talk. I know Morrissey's coming, but you don't yet know what you have with him. In terms of the right side guys, Truba, you don't move at all. So then it gets you down to Bogosian and Bufflin, and I see what you mean with. I personally prefer Bufflin to Bogosian as a player because Bufflin is a smarter player. You have to go out in the trade market and see what each brings back. And I think that you need to make a decision. And also, see, it's tough because, and I know it's tough when I was asking you, is what do you do Bufflin money-wise? I mean, I'm not giving Bufflin a 7-year deal. No chance. No, he hasn't been in shape. I wouldn't give him that long-term of a deal. So if you can get Dustin Bufflin on a 4-year deal, if he's going to play D at a 4-year deal at 24, and you can get a really good forward return for Bogosian, then it's something you have to really consider. But if Bufflin's going to price himself out, then you trade him in the offseason. Or if you fall out of it here, you trade him to get more for him because you'll be two playoffs for a team that's acquiring him. And then you keep Bogosian and you move on. But the decision has to be made. I mean, that's at the end of the day. And Coach Maurice is going to have a tough decision when Truba comes back in a month.
And we'll talk about that later on in the show, actually, about Coach Maurice and when he has to make that decision come February. It's an interesting problem for the Jets to have. We'll talk more about it as it continues on. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're going to head out to St. John's, Newfoundland, talk to Brendan McCarthy of the St. John's Telegram about the Ice Caps. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Here's a feed now, and Akhmatuk breaking in front, they score! Chase Palissy with the thing of beauty! A quick strike offense here in the third period. What a play by Akhmatuk! What vision, and what a pass on the stick of Palissy!
Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Remember, hashtag Temu1290 for all your Temu memories throughout the show today. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the St. John's Telegram to talk about the St. John's Ice Caps, Brendan McCarthy. Brendan, good afternoon, or good evening, I guess, down there on the Rock, and thanks for joining us.
It is evening. I don't know what the cutoff is, but it is past 6:30 here, so I say you're right. Actually, there's an old Newfoundland tradition that anything past 2 o'clock in the afternoon is evening, so you are safe.
Okay, good. I'm glad I wouldn't want to screw that up, so I'm glad that the Newfoundland tradition is on my side. Brendan, obviously brought you on to talk about the Ice Caps and their season so far. A little bit of struggles for the Winnipeg Jets AHL franchise, 15-16-5 so far for fourth place in the Atlantic Division. Of course, long season still ahead. You know, is there a forward down in St. John's that, to your mind, could come up and help the Winnipeg Jets' depth and their scoring issues?
Not one that's healthy right now. Probably, to me, the only pure scorer right now, at least proven at the pro level, is Eric O'Dell, and he's out. He's hurt. He's out for at least another month. And other than that, you've got players that you've seen in Winnipeg already, John Albert and Carl Klingberg. We're talking about NHL contracted players now, and other than that, it's youngsters. You just heard in the lead in Scott Kosmachuk is starting to come on a little bit, but he's a long, long ways away from being ready for Winnipeg. He leads at least the rest of this year and probably all of next year before he's close to being ready. So I would say that other than O'Dell, who's injured, and players you've already seen, nope, you're going to have to search for it somewhere else. So goal scoring has been a problem here, and if it's a problem here, it would be a problem finding somebody who could help the Jets.
Brendan, your colleague Robin Short was writing for the St. John's Telegram about, you know, the halfway point of the season and kind of giving, you know, an assessment on the team, and he kind of touched on some of the things that you've already talked about, some of the struggles scoring goals, but really gives a ton of credit to Connor Hellebuck, who he calls the MVP of this team. How surprised are you, and we should mention too that he was recently named to the All-Star game, the AHL All-Star game, but how surprised have you been how well he's played in his first pro year?
I don't know if surprised, I guess, but an eye-opener, a revelation, because you're not sure what, you know, in terms of players coming certainly from the college level, what you're going to get. And especially with, you know, with Peter Budaj being here at the start of the season, the feeling was that it was going to be, at best, a 50-50 proposition between Budaj and Hellebuck. But Hellebuck is unquestionably number one now. He plays about three-quarters of the game. Games, which I think is telling itself. He looks like he can be a horse. Again, you know, goaltenders, defensemen, for the most part, is my feeling, at least, they need some time to develop in the minors. But everything about Hellebuck says that he's going to play in the NHL. He's got good size. He uses it well. He's not a fancy goaltender. He's not a Hossack type. He's not all over the place. But he's aware of his size. He uses it well. He plays angles. He's nothing fancy. But I tell you what, it's his mental demeanor. He is unflappable. He'll give up a bad goal, but he has no memory of it. It's forgotten on the next shift, and he moves on. He's the type of player players like to play in front of. They'll have confidence in. And he has been their best player this year. He is going to be the, right now as it stands now, the lone representative for the Ice Caps at the All-Star game later this month in Utica, New York. And he's deserving. And he has been their best player this year. He's the reason why they're close to 500. He's won every game. Every win they've had is by Hellebuck.
It's really incredible, you know, for a guy coming in as a rookie there, Brendan. And you look at adding to the team, and we asked about scoring, and you mentioned, you know, scoring's been a troublesome point here for the Ice Caps thus far. JC LaPonde is a guy, you know, more of a checking forward. Do you see right. him being able to carve out a role in the NHL, maybe as a fourth liner?
I do, but again, I think he's, you know, again, he's a player that's going to need some time. Mm-hmm. You know, he's struggled to score goals. He has just one this year. He can pass. The Ice Caps are playing tonight, but they're coming off a couple of wins over the number one team in the league earlier this week, the Manchester Monarchs, and they did it with a pretty depleted lineup. And their first win was a 1-0 overtime win with LaPonde setting up Ben Walker, who's here on an AHL deal just out of junior, for a beautiful goal, beautiful pass. But LaPonde, you know, he can be a fourth liner. He's a very willing guy. He's not big, but he'll go with anybody. Right. He gives up height and weight to almost everybody he takes on when he drops the gloves. And so he's fearless that way. He's very athletic. This kid could have been a champion wakeboarder, and has been in the past. He's a very athletic kid. But again, I think with all these youngsters, and when we talked about this, the goal-scoring problems here, it's not a surprise. We knew coming in this was going to be a team that's pretty young up front, and you're starting to see the influx now of Winnipeg draft picks, but they take a while to develop. But Lapan, and I know he's in his second year, but he's another guy that can use another year, year and a half down here before. A lot of these guys are going to have to go all the way through their entry-level deals before you're going to get a real good read on them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Brendan McCarthy of the St. John's Telegram, talking about the Winnipeg Jets AHL affiliate on in the Rock on Newfoundland. Brendan, we wanted to ask you about another Brendan, that's being Brendan Kitchton. We saw him up here somewhat with the Jets last season. You know, how would you compare his game on the blue line for the Ice Caps compared to what he did last season?
Well, last year, I mean, he had a great start to the season. You know, he was playing the power play right off the bat. He picked up some points. He was pretty steady in the second half, but he plateaued a little bit. Here at the start of the season, he was all right. But again, he's another one of the injured players. He suffered a broken jaw in practice. A puck hit him in the face. So he's out. He's skating again, but looks like it's going to be a while before he gets back. So, you know, this team was fairly fortunate for a while that they were healthy and they hadn't been exposed to call-ups. And all of a sudden, bang, 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 they lost four defense. Ben Chiarot's gone. We don't expect to see him back. And then it was Briette, who was maybe their best defenseman, very steady defenseman in that terms. Then LRB, then Kitchen went down. So this was a team that, you know, had eight or nine defensemen, not a rookie amongst them at the start of the season, was seen as their strength. And all of a sudden, they're starting games with guys on PTOs right now. You know, we were seeing guys like Ryan Perron, Yann Sauvé, you know, people in Winnipeg may be familiar with. They're with this team now and their experience, but they weren't here at the start of the year. So the defense, which looked so deep and so strong at the start of the season, it's really taken a knock. You can never, you know, it's like pitching. You can never have enough defensemen down here, and the Ice Caps keep proving it.
You know, Brendan, we got to talk more about Scott Kozmichuk, because fans listening would get mad at us. Pardon me if we didn't. You mentioned him earlier, third rounder of the Winnipeg Jets. He's played in almost all the games. He's got 6 goals, 11 points. How would you assess his first full year in the AHL?
I think it's like, again, you look at Adam Lowry last year, and Adam Lowry, you know, his first half of his first pro season, he struggled a little bit. You know, he had some injury issues as well, but he really turned it on the second half. And I think this, you're looking for the same from Kozmichuk, and certainly in the first few games after the Christmas break, he looks like a player who is starting to figure out the pro level. I tell you, you know, they talk about the jump from juniors to AHL, you know, going up a rung on the ladder. I think it's really two rungs. I think it's a much bigger jump than players and maybe fans realize, and they find that out pretty early on. So Kozmichuk, you know, he struggled at the start of the season, but as you said, he was getting a chance to play. All those youngsters, Ryan Olsen, Austin Broussard, who's not really a rookie, but it kind of seems that way because he only played half a season last year. All these guys with NHL contracts, they played a lot. Every one except one game this year for each one of those guys, and for most of the time, they had played every game. But Kozmichuk's coming on. He's had a 2-goal game in the last game of a road trip. He's got points in 4 straight games, and I don't know if people heard that lead-in where Brian Rogers was making a call, an absolutely beautiful setup the other night for a goal for Chase Ballasy, who's maybe the best rookie, but he's on an AHL contract right now, another win over the Manchester Monarchs. And so he's starting to show things coming. He's exactly what you'd expect. You know, maybe struggle, kind of finding his way in the first half of the season, but he's coming on. He's got some talent. You don't get 50 goals and 100 points in the OHL as a captain of a team that, you know, goes deep into the playoffs without having some talent, and he's starting to show it.
Brendan, you've mentioned a lot of players here, and we kind of asked you about the guys that the Jets have drafted and fans are generally familiar with, but is there anybody on this team that it kind of has come out of nowhere and may make his way to the NHL eventually?
You know, again, you know, you've got those two types of players, and you recognize it from your days at the Moose. You've got the NHL contract players, the guys everybody knows about, you know, they have, you know, they're mostly draft picks, and then you get the AHL players, and sometimes guys step up and get a contract. That Chase Ballasy is not a big kid. He was a Nashville draft pick, actually, out of Western Michigan. He's a California kid who went to Toronto to play some hockey. Then moved on to the university ranks. He's not big, but I tell you what, he's got some skill. And in the past, Winnipeg has shown a willingness to give NHL contracts to AHL guys. Maybe the second example of that would be Will O'Neill, who's on defense, who was a draft pick, was signed to an entry-level deal, a short-term entry-level deal, was relegated to an AHL deal, but had a great year last year, great playoff run with the Ice Caps, and is back up to an NHL deal. So he's that type of player. So if Chase Ballasty, I tell you what, he's shown some things this year. He's a college guy. He doesn't have a whole lot of size, but I tell you what, pay attention. This might be a guy who might be worth an NHL deal in the offseason.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Brendan McCarthy of the St. John's Telegram, talking about the St. John's Ice Caps. Brendan, how would you rate the job Ice Caps head coach Keith McCambridge has done so far this season?
I think, I mean, this is the year of, in terms of winning. I'm sure your fans down here are going to have a different, you know, they want to see win. It's hard for fans, especially, you know, those who are at the games and paying money to see the team, to kind of buy into this whole idea of the AHL being a developmental league. That certainly is part of the work of this of an AHL team. Here they want to see wins. They want to see entertaining hockey. And right now we're seeing a team that's iffy, and if a team that if it makes the playoffs, that will be an accomplishment. I think the biggest thing that Keith McCambridge has done this year is you're starting to see guys now who are ready to come to the NHL. I think the best example of that is Ben Chiarot. Ben Chiarot's a defenseman, has been 3-plus years in the system, and he got him ready. I think, the job that Keith McCambridge is doing this year is more in the developmental level, but if he does get them to the playoffs, I tell you, that will be an accomplishment for him. I think, though, you know, I think organizationally, I think if you're looking at this in the longer term, I'll put it that way, I think everybody's waiting for that influx of players next year, many of whom we saw at the World Junior Championship.
Brendan McCarthy covers the St. John's Ice Caps for the St. John's Telegram. Brendan, really appreciate your time this evening, and thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No trouble. Enjoy your work as well, guys.
Thank you, Brendan. Appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Remember, hashtag Temu1290. We'll hear your Temu reminiscences.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Brendan McCarthy for joining us to talk about the Ice Caps. Be sure to follow him and his colleague Robin Short on Twitter. You can find them there. They do a great job covering the Winnipeg Jets AHL affiliate. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
I have to wish my brother a happy birthday today.
There you go. Happy birthday to AP, one-time guest on the show.
Yes, for the sandwich tasting.
For the sandwich
tasting.
eating contest, where we tasted the sandwich on air.
And we're going to need him back, by the way. Yeah, I echo what Richie said. Happy birthday to Adam. If you didn't know, that's Richard's brother.
Yeah.
We're going to...
Somebody else's birthday in the room on Monday.
Let's get the mic on here.
Yeah. You know, big... 2-9, is that it?
No, not that old.
No.
2-8.
Sorry, I'm 1 year ahead of myself there.
Michael Remus.
It's just he's so mature, you think. I think he's 29. It must be.
He's going to be going out for the big birthday tonight.
Oh, boy. Look out, Winnipeg.
That's right.
You know, tell the people of the peg to, you know, he'll be roaming the streets wild and crazy.
Yes.
He'll be in bed by 11:30.
Oh, definitely not.
No.
The Jets game will be still on at 11:30.
That's true.
That's a good point. I forgot about that. 11:45, Remus. I'll give you till 11:45. Anyways, a happy birthday on Monday, Remus. What does Rick have planned for you? Do you know?
Rick's got a late game on Sunday, so probably nothing.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. That's good.
What if Rick didn't have a late game on Sunday?
Probably
still nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's get back into talking about Dustin Byfuglien like we were doing before the interview with Brendan McCarthy. And we were talking about what to do if he's going to be a defenseman, if he's going to be a forward. And, you know, talk about the contract terms. We really didn't get deep into the contract terms about what Dustin Byfuglien would be worth if he was to hit the open market, if he was to get to unrestricted free agency, and a team said, you're our defenseman, and we're going to make you our number one defenseman. What is Dustin Byfuglien worth, given sort of, I mean, he's got some baggage attached to him. given some of his defensive lapses in past and maybe some of his weight issues, which are fortunately for the Winnipeg Jets in past. But what would you give Dustin Byfuglien if you're a general manager who needs a right side defenseman?
He's 29 years old right now. So, you know, you're looking at turning 30 in March, and then if under contract next year, be 31.
Right.
So you're going to give a 31-year-old defenseman who had the issues that you mentioned anything more than a four-year deal. You might see him get 5 years on the open market because skill, offense from the back end, and his size, it's hard. You can't teach it, right? Mm-hmm. You just can't. So I could see him getting 5 years on the... I could see him getting 5 years, 25 to 30 mil, guys. I could. Now, it takes one team. It just takes one team. I would be far more comfortable with 4 years at 24, but again, you know, that year and how teams perceive that extra year and what the situation is for the general manager. If he's, his job's on the line, he can get a big-time defenseman for the next 2-3 years. That's all he cares about. That's all a factor. But, I mean, guys like him don't hit the open market too much. It's for sure going to be as a defenseman, though. You know, some team, if they like what they see defensively, and there's still some lapses here, guys, don't get me wrong, but if they like what they see here defensively in terms of playing within a structure, well, then the other aspects of his game are going to make for a big payday. They are. And the flexibility, too, is always an asset, because frankly, once you get him under contract, a couple years down the road, if you got a couple of really good young defensemen coming through and maybe you want to throw them at forward for a shift or two, whatever it may be, you have that too. And the power play aspect we haven't even got into, but that's part and parcel with the offensive production, is how much he helps your power play. Big shot from the point, that's not going to go anywhere. And being able to draw a guy high in the zone on the power play and create room on the you know, if you're playing like the Jets are right now, kind of an umbrella. Teams are cheating more to Dustin Byfuglien up high because of his shot. That leaves a cross-ice pass available or the down-low pass available, whatever they're going to give you. So there's a lot of assets that he brings to the table. Now, there are drawbacks, and there is risk for sure. But when the UFA status – when a guy hits UFA status and a team does not have to give you up anything other than money, the blinders are on as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you're 100% right, Rich, and we saw that in July with some of the money that was being thrown around – especially to Matt Niskanen and Brooks Orpik in Washington, two good defensemen, but they were given a lot of money. And again, I've always said that, you know, it's tough to really gauge a player's worth, especially when a team is really overpays to get him. But as far as Dustin Byfuglien goes, Richie, I think it's interesting that we're talking about this now, because I think if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, you're thinking about this. I'm not saying that, you know, it's keeping him up at night, but I think you don't want to get in a situation next year.
That's right.
When you have the potential to give more power to the player.
Like Frolik.
Like Michael Frolik, and that's another player we'll be talking about in the coming months, a guy who's going to be a free agent coming up in the summer.
UFA.
So, you know, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff has, you know, a decision to make as far as, does he want to keep him and not sign him to an extension next year? Does he want to trade him? I think that trading him is absolutely ridiculous. My opinion is he's extremely valuable. I was always against trading him.
If you fall out of the playoffs and you don't think you can sign Frolik, you have to trade Frolik. Don't you?
Are we talking about Byfuglien or Frolik now?
Well, it's both of them. It applies to both of them. You can't lose an asset for nothing. Look at the teams who lose assets for nothing. Ottawa.
Sure.
How many assets do they lose for nothing?
The Devils.
These, exactly right. As we talked about that a couple weeks ago, the teams that lose assets for nothing are in trouble because they're not restocking the cupboard. You're losing a guy who contributes 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes a game. Chara. Like, you lose these guys and you don't get anything back. How do you replace them? You can't.
Let's go back to Byfuglien again, and we were talking about it in the previous segment, you know, looking at, you know, fitting his salary in among the Jets' defense, and the Jets already spend a ton of money on the back end, and they have really, since day one that they've been back here in Winnipeg, we referenced that article you wrote, you know, 3 years ago about the percentage that the Jets spend of their salary cap on their back end. You know, how much of the factor, you know, how much do you think that plays into the Jets' decision-making when the time comes to make that decision?
Well, it's huge. I mean, of course, because we're talking about a cap world, right? It's not like I can spend whatever I want on defense and then spend whatever I want on forward. Whatever you spend on defense cuts into whatever you're spending on forward. Whatever you're spending on goaltending, it's the same. It applies to everything across the board there. So it's a huge factor, Drew. And I also want to talk about what you do with Byfuglien in the next 3 weeks.
Sure.
Everybody in the Jets seems to be coming back 3 weeks before they said they would. So what if Trouba comes back in 2 weeks? What are you going to do?
Well, that's a very good question because you're right. Everybody,
you're going to try a guy. Sorry to interrupt you. You're going to try a guy on his left side. You're going to try a guy on the left side that isn't comfortable playing the left side in the middle of a playoff race? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, you know, that's a fair point because it does seem like everybody's getting a lot healthier a lot quicker than we thought because yeah. You know, we've been told that everybody's out till February, till after the All-Star break, and everybody but Trouba's back in the lineup, yeah. You know, tonight against the Los Angeles Kings, 9 p.m. here on TSN 1290. So, you know, let's say that decision comes right after the All-Star break. Let's say it's the beginning of February and it's time for that decision to be made. Mm-hmm. How do you move Dustin Byfuglien back to forward given how impactful he's been as a defenseman?
Well, I think that's the issue here is that you're not going to move him back to forward. And I think the reason why you're not going to move him back to forward is, as you've documented, Richie, he doesn't want to move back to forward. B, he's proven that he's a better defenseman than he was a year ago, a year and a half ago. And I don't think you want to disrupt that chemistry that he's having on defense. And, you know, there might...
Well, Sherratt. And I also think, Ezzy, that Paul Postma's lack of performance has really made this... an easier decision than it would have been otherwise.
Right, and that's why...
He didn't take advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's why for tonight's game, guys, you're going to see Paul Postma and Adam Partey as the scratches with Stewart and Enstrom going back into the lineup. And then what I see happening is, and Grant Clitson, unfortunately, might be done for the year, but when you look at who's coming back, the odd man out, it's probably going to be Jay Harrison, and that's not no offense to Jay Harrison, but I think, you know, the way Sherratt has played, I'm not saying that Jay Harrison's going to be a healthy scratch for the rest of the year when Trouba comes back. I just think he's like your sixth or seventh guy, especially when Jacob Trouba comes back, because he's your best defenseman.
Yep.
So I think, you know, it's a good problem to have. You have depth, and if Jay Harrison's your seventh defenseman, I think he's done an excellent job playing with Grant Clitson, and then last game he played with Zach Bogosian. Richie, but I think you're right. I think looking forward, they have some serious decisions to make as far as when they're going to sign guys. Are they going to have to move someone out? Because as we said, if you have four defensemen making $4.5 million or whatever it is, you know, that really cripples your ability to sign an extra forward. Because as we know, you know, you're probably in the offseason going to be looking for another third liner or fourth liner. That's what the Jets really lack right now.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, right? So what do you do? If you're the Jets, you're going to say, okay, we're going to go forward with these three guys on our right side on the back end. We're going to go forward with a loaded back end and with Hutchinson playing so well, maybe playing more games than he is right now. Do you still, can you make the playoffs with that team? And if not, then you have to go acquire somebody who can play in that role in the offense. And that's the tricky part, because you're trying to acquire a top nine guy when conceivably Byfuglien can play a top nine role. You don't have to give anything up for him.
He was so hit and miss as a top nine
player. Better than Hallischek.
Oh, absolutely. I still think
that's the thing, though, Drew, right? So, I mean, the question...
Right now, you have to go out and acquire a top nine forward.
Well, okay. So you're going to acquire a top nine forward.
Yeah.
What are you going to give up for the top nine forward?
You give up a draft pick. You give up... I don't say... It doesn't have to be the difference maker of a top nine forward. You give up a third round pick, or you give up a third and a fourth round pick, or whatever it is. Okay. But, I mean... And I said this last week, I believe, or 2 weeks ago at this point in time. The team has managed to keep their heads above water as they get through all of these defensive injuries. Mm-hmm. And they've done it with a patchwork group of offensive forwards. Largely, because they moved Byfuglien to defense. Yep. So they've done it through with a patchwork group. At some point in time, the players in the locker room, and to some extent Paul Maurice, have to be looking up to the general manager's booth and saying, look, we've done our part. We need a forward. There's a glaring hole there. Matt Hallischek can't get it done. Go out. Don't mortgage the future, of course. Don't do anything rash. Don't do anything stupid. Mm-hmm. But go out and use a third or a fourth or something along those lines and just get us a guy who can be a stopgap guy for the next 6 months or even the next 18 months until somebody else is ready to fill that role. That's on Kevin Cheveldayoff. And I think everybody external to the organization is certainly looking. And you hear all the talk about he's trying, he's on the phone, he's on the phone, he's on the phone. But, you know, that... You know, and a dollar is going to get you a cup of coffee. Do it. The team, the fans, the organization is waiting for you to do it and give that team the kick in the pants to get over the top and into the playoffs. Let's head to break. When we come back, Brian Hayward, Anaheim Ducks color analyst, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.